Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio. For more info on the show, raisingthevibrationradio.com, latalkradio.com. I'm your host, Sheena Metal, and I'm at sheenametal.com and everywhere on social media, just at Sheena Metal. And I have a movement of peace and love and kindness and unity, which is where this show came from. It's called I Am Raising the Vibration of the Nation and the World, and we're at iamraisingthevibration.com. And we're working to make the world a more peaceful place, a more loving place, a kinder place, a more unified place where everyone can coexist equally. And just good vibes all around and raising that vibration. So my guests always have something to do with the ideology of that movement. And certainly my guest today is no exception to that. He's a wonderfully talented actor, writer, producer, director, but he's also a kind soul and somebody who understands that the world is a better place for all of us to be positive and joyful in it, because the opposite is just a little scary. Please welcome to the show the wonderful Jason Stewart is here. Hello, my friend. I'm so thrilled to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me. We were at, should I name drop?
Sure.
Allison Ingram's birthday party.
Yep.
Was it Saturday night?
Saturday night.
I had so much sugar there, I can't remember. And we were there Saturday night, and we were talking about this, and you said, you know, you should do the show. And I said, I've never done this particular version.
Yeah, you've done many of my other shows, but never this show.
The Sheena Metal Experience.
You do quite a bit, yes. And have you ever done Haunted Playground with me, talking about spiritual paranormal stuff? We'll have to do that sometime, too. That'll be interesting.
I don't think I've done it, but I would love it.
You know, it's interesting because I founded this movement, obviously, the day after the election, not just because that's when we got the announcement of a new president, but also because it was my mother's birthday. And for about 6 months since her death, I had been wanting to do something to carry her teachings on.
Aww.
This is a hard time where I think people are trying to find their balance between being proactive and being passionate about how they want to change the world and being positive. And everyone's sort of trying to find where those two things meet for them.
Well, I was very pleased when I heard you were doing this show because, and I won't talk in detail, so don't get nervous.
Okay.
There were some personal things that you told me that had happened with you publicly and personally.
Sure.
And your way of handling it was deciding to do this show. That was part of it, I believe. Am I correct?
No, this show started a month before that.
Oh, so, but there were other things. There were a number
of actually,
things.
No, this show started after that. The movement started a month before.
But whether,
yeah, this show started after some things happened,
The details don't really matter, but it was with, you know, friends and lovers and partners and all sorts of things in your life, and this was your answer to that.
Absolutely.
And I thought, wow, that's, because I know you felt sad about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then instead of sitting in that, this is the answer, is to do a show to talk about how we change the curve of life.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not a secret. I talk about it on the show that I lost a couple of my best girlfriends to the election and saw a lot of people losing a lot of people. That year was my first year without my mom, and I spent Christmas and Thanksgiving with one of my best friends from high school and his family. And he himself is gay, and his family, like many families in Orange County where I grew up, thankfully not my own parents, are very conservative and voted for Donald Trump. And there was fights at every holiday party.
It's so hard to understand.
I know.
Just from the aspect, being an actor, being a comedian, being an artist, when I go to work, there is, I remember somebody, I think it was Roseanne Barr, said, when you walk in, you say hello to everybody,
right?
Whether it be the guy who washes the dishes to the guy who booked you at the club. And when you are the headliner for that week, or even one of the comedians, you set the tone for how that week is going to go.
Absolutely.
And I remember thinking that when you do a film, it's the director or the star of the film. And I remember going on the set of The Birth of a Nation. And I was there a day early, because I like to do that when I'm going to have a bigger role in something. I want to be able to see what the tone is and how everybody's, the tone of the film acting-wise, but then also who everybody is.
Yeah, just get the feel of the set.
I hate first days of school. So I saw, oh, these guys are really getting in there, and the depth is really big. And I saw that, and I said, I got to get back to my hotel room and get to work. But I watched the work, and I watched the way Nate Parker treated everybody on the set. There was an inclusiveness that I had not seen on most of the projects I'd work on. But I did three in a row that same theme was. It was Love is Strange with Ira Sachs directing it, with John Lithgow and Fred Alfred. If anybody says they know him and they call him Alfred instead of Fred, they don't know him. So
right.
Fred
but
Molina,
the world knows him that way.
And Marissa Tomei and Harriet Harris.
Wow, what a great
Cheyenne,
cast.
And Jackson. And I met all these wonderful actors, and they were so welcoming to me. And especially, I was a nervous wreck because I only had one scene and I talked for two pages, and they were so wonderful. And I remember that tone that was said, and Iris spoke so softly, and, you know, and then when I was doing Sean Baker's film, he said, hey, would you like to do this? He said, would you want to see the script? I said, no, I don't have to see it. I want to work with you. Whatever, you just tell me where and when I show up and what I can do to help. And that's the way, you know, the way someone treats you is so much of a tone setter of what's going to be happening on a particular show, or a film or television show, or if you work in the theater or a comedy club or wherever, it's to really listen to what's going on in the room, because we all have the chatter in our head. I have this very large committee that has meetings, and there's one guy that says things a lot without, you know, he used to say things a lot without thinking, and now he's not allowed to talk. He has an office off to the side, and he isn't allowed to come out unless, you know, once in a while he'll come out, and I go, oh God, is that him again?
He's like the guy from Office Space. He keeps getting a smaller and smaller office as you get healthier and healthier.
Yes, and his office is now in the basement.
So just what you're talking about, then let me ask you something that I think a lot of folks are struggling with that ideology that we all should have in our professional and personal lives when we walk into a party, a family party, a friend's party with people we don't know, a set, a new day at work, a first day in school. A lot of people now, I think, building up to and since the election, are so racked with a lot of different emotions at once that they don't think that they think if they're friendly to people that are politically or spiritually ideologically different from them, that they're compromising their own beliefs in doing so. I got some flack when I first started the movement in November of 2016 because people were like, why are you talking about peace when we're at war? And people really honestly emailed me that. And my response to that is always,
why are we talking about peace because we're at war?
Yeah, people believe that we're at war in this country and in the world.
Well, we are at war with Afghanistan still.
Well, I know, but people think we're at war between people with one kind of spiritual political ideology.
Between, I think, the Democrats and the Republicans, and Bill Maher talks about this on the show, and he says that we as Democrats are very wrong because we're not being the assholes that the Republicans are, and they will just fight you tooth and nail. They don't care if they agree. They stick as a group no matter what, and they all make this decision that this is the thing. Everybody says the world is no longer the world is flat,
right.
And we all decide the world is flat.
There's no dinosaurs.
Exactly, and they really protect each other,
yeah.
So there's a certain positivity to that in some way, that they just protect their own. They don't wash their dirty laundry in public. But yet, when the things that they're doing are so absurd, from saying that, you know, he had the most people come to his inauguration
than
anybody, and then you see the two pictures side by side, and they say that it's not true, and then he makes somebody who works for him get up and defend that.
Yeah.
There's a lunacy in it, and you know, and I do believe this. I'm sort of long-winded, of course, as
no,
you know.
No, please. That's why you're here. We have 2 hours, you'd be long-winded.
When you're on the set, and there is a tone set for you to do your work, it makes it so much easier. When the tone is not set, and there's sort of havoc, and you don't know what goes on, some people, you know, work well in that. I don't.
Yeah, I don't either.
I get worse because it scares me, and I start to rely on my talent and my experience, and I'll get a okay performance. But I think I do better when I feel supported.
Yeah, I do too.
And safe.
Some artists create better in adversity. I create better in serenity. It just depends on your personality and your makeup, I would think.
And there's also this idea, you know, that I mean, I remember what I put on Facebook was the big page at the top. You can put your big picture on the top.
Yeah.
And I said, when Trump was elected, I showed a picture of the Obama family, and I said, class has left the White House. So when people would often say about Obama that he waited too long to respond to things, and I feel the opposite. I respected that he waited too long. You know, everything has to be in bite size and done this second. I don't think we understand a lot of the things that go on in this country to this second. I mean, I don't think,
yes,
I think
no,
it takes
I
a
agree.
Minute. It takes a little while sometimes to know. And they'll say, why did Hillary Clinton wait 3 days to say something about this? No one's allowed to think or to write something or put something together or... No one's allowed to have, you know, and they want us to comment on everything as it happens. And I don't think that's the way to do it. And I do believe that the way Trump has behaved, take away anything that he's trying to accomplish, whatever his plan is.
Right.
The way he has behaved, the way he has talked about people, the bully in him, they called it the New Jersey in him, the fight, you know, that kind of fight back, that, you know, that push-pull that he likes as a human being.
Right. I think he just likes discord. Some people just like the tone of discord.
That helps as a world leader.
No.
Because number one, and if people are listening out here, you know, and feel differently, please, send Sheena an email and I will certainly respond to it. I believe that there are different cultures all over the world and different languages and different colloquialisms and different ways of being. And if you are not clear and measured about what you say and how you communicate, you can be so easily misunderstood by another country. Never mind just the people here who are raised in different parts of the room.
And I think it's even more than that. I think that...
But that's the first thing, Sheena, and that's so important.
I agree.
It really is, because that sets the tone for everything. I mean, then we can go into detail
about
him.
No, I completely agree with you.
And the highlights of, you know, of what he said in Virginia and that just... I took to my bed the next day.
I mean, even to go less detailed and more big picture with him, whether or not he speaks like a bully. And there's something about him that has sort of unleashed the bully in some people.
Okay, so I'm going to be the other side. So the other side says, we want someone that fights hard for us. We want someone that takes what's ours.
That's not being a bully. That's being strong. I have no problem with strong. I have problem.
But that's not what that. But you're not. So you got to put yourself in these people.
I know.
And they
I know.
They believe that they want someone to fight back. Okay, I get that. So they're fighting back. So if I say to you, you know, in a deal that I try to really fight and push you really hard, and say no go unless you do this, and that's the way you do a deal. Will you get a better deal? I don't know. I mean, there was one, I wish I remembered his name. I should have been more prepared. There was a very famous Republican senator, very old, who's been around forever, and he said, trickle down has never worked. So my mom, who's 80, almost 81, said the other day, God, I wish I didn't sell my taxes. My Republican girlfriend says I'm an idiot because I sold my stocks because they were so high. And then a couple days later, they dropped almost back to what it was. And then it got worse the next day. And I don't know what's today. But this week, it's gotten really low.
And interesting how it directly flies up and down depending on what he says in speeches and what's going on with him.
Which I don't understand.
Yeah, no, it's not even world events. It's actually what he says from day to day.
Well, so then that tells you, I guess, that is the factual information of some sorts that says that what he's doing is affecting the fear of the country. But I'm guessing, you know, it's birds of a feather. I don't know a lot of people that voted for Trump, and I don't know a lot of people who believe in this kind of discourse. So I don't have a lot to say on the other side other than what I read and what I watch on television.
And, you know, I do know a lot of people. I grew up in a very conservative part of Southern California, so I know a lot of folks that I grew up with.
My brother voted for him, and he said the main reason was because of the death tax. So when he gets his inheritance, that he won't have to pay taxes. That's it.
Right.
So it's
sometimes
about
it's that
rich.
Simple. It's about keeping your money and staying white.
Well, I don't. That's another.
It's a lot of white folks.
That's yes, they're all white, and that's another thing that's really interesting. I had a conversation with my cousin the other day about, there was a thing that Martin Luther King on a billboard, and said AIDS is a AIDS is a social issue.
Oh.
And he said, why is it a social issue? It's a disease. I said, of course it is.
Yeah. And why is Martin Luther King talking about it? He died.
Well, they were saying it because he's a civil rights leader.
Right.
And it is. It was. They didn't want to do it because of who it was happening to.
Oh, absolutely. That's
and
true.
The possibility of that kind of epidemic was so big. And it got really big. And that happening was sort of, you know, that we could contain it, and we didn't. I mean, we had some opportunities that we missed, and it got really bad for a while.
Right, absolutely. Right. And I'm a big fan of making sure that we as human beings continue on our path of enlightenment and don't turn the clock back. To me, enlightenment and evolution happen for a reason, and we need to keep moving forward in that direction and not going back and repeating old patterns that hopefully we've evolved past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand that some people want to keep more of their money, and some people want to give more of their money to social programs. I'm a Democrat from Democrats from Democrats. I have no problem giving money, my money, in to help the whole. I'm not a socialist. I'm not a communist. I'm a capitalist, but I have absolutely no problem with all of the things that were set up by the Roosevelts in the New Deal. No problem at all. I understand other people, they want to keep their own money. They don't like that. They don't want to have medical insurance. They want to put all their money in an account and hope that someday they can pay it. They don't want people who don't have things to get things. I don't know what they think happens when someone gets sick and they don't have anything, but that's between them and their government. Where I draw the line is when people's civil rights and human rights start getting taken away.
Well, it's deeper than that. That's what they don't understand. Is that, so if you're a white, heterosexual, Christian man, you in this country, and me, and, you know, being someone who's of a certain age, those people are brought up with the idea that they can become president. And they, which means that, oh, my baby can, look at my son, he could be president, you know, when he's born. But what they're saying is, look at all the opportunities.
Exactly.
Now, me growing up being a gay Jewish person,
right?
My mother would say, darling, just come home with a C. That's all I'm asking. Meaning that she went through the Depression, her mom went through the Depression. That's how she was raised.
Right.
My father, you know, with the idea of someone who had been in the Holocaust, running from the Nazis, not in the camps, but in the ghettos, and running from the Nazis for most of his childhood. You know, we were about surviving.
Yes.
And before my father passed, he said to me, my goal in life was to make money so I would never have to be hungry again, and never would any of my kids, you know.
Yeah.
And that was his goal in life. So who was that? Donald Trump's goal? Never to be hungry again? No.
Yeah.
His father was wealthy, and not putting him down, he was a lucky guy.
Yeah.
So he, you know, and I always say, what's the difference between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton? What's the difference? And I'm only going to talk about the facts, not how I feel about them emotionally. Donald Trump is a man who has been married three times. He has three sets of children. I believe he has five children. He has been a real estate tycoon, meaning he's owned a lot of property and sold his name to make more property, to make money, which he's done very well at. And he became a very, very famous reality show, The Apprentice host.
Right.
And he produced the beauty contest
right.
show, which was very successful. So those are the things that he did. I don't know anything else. That's
no,
what he did.
As far as we know, he's never held any kind of an office.
No, he hasn't.
Even
and
on his own.
He's created these things.
Even at his own company, right? Because his company does not have a board of directors.
No, he's
so he's
the president.
Never even held an office in a company.
No, he's never been chosen. This is the first thing he's been chosen for, other than being chosen to host
TV.
The Apprentice.
Yeah, yeah.
And being very successful at
sure,
it.
Sure, yes.
Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, was first a lawyer, married a man, had a child, stuck with her husband through very rough times, still stuck with him. I don't know what their relationship is, but
it's not her business.
But they stuck together.
But politically, they've done wonderful things for our country as a team.
No, I can't say that. Those are the results. I'm just saying what they did, what the facts were.
Okay.
Because that's you know, depending on how you look at it. She was a lawyer. Her first thing, what she did was for children's rights, mm-hmm. medical rights, mm-hmm. women's rights, 9/11 rights, mm-hmm. LGBT rights. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that she fought
and
for.
And then you can also say that.
And, you know, wait, first lady.
Right.
Senator.
Right.
And Secretary of State. All things she was chosen to be.
Well, and the First Lady of Arkansas first.
Oh, yes, yes.
So she's worked
a governor's wife, a president's wife,
right.
a senator for two terms, and a Secretary of State.
That's a lot of
levels
of government.
All chosen to do.
Yes.
And these are facts. I'm not mm-hmm. saying how she did the job. Yes, she made mistakes. Yes, she made calls that probably didn't work. Yes, she tried to do things. And some things work and doesn't. So, but that's who she is.
Well, when I said that, and you're right, I got too opinionated. So let me rephrase that. She and her husband have both been in service to our country.
Oh, and the last thing, of course,
is they
have a foundation that for helping people with HIV and AIDS across the world
mm-hmm.
with President Senior Bush.
Mm-hmm.
They had done that together. But that's her husband. I don't know how involved she was in that. But those are the facts. She's the smartest person in the room. When she speaks, she's prepared. She mm-hmm. can answer questions on television, complicated questions, in less than sound bites. I've never seen him answer a question where I really truly believe where his side is. Yes, people change because they learn things. That
sure.
I understand.
Sure.
Never once. She has said she's made mistakes publicly. She has said she's made the right decision, and she explained why she made that decision. You know, and maybe it didn't turn out the way she had thought it would. Whether it be Benghazi, whether it be voting for going to war, whether it be why she didn't talk about LGBT rights, she's explained her view. I may not have agreed with her, but they were not short answers. They were not uncomplicated. They were complicated answers, not uncomplicated, because they're big questions. I've never seen. He changes so much.
Mm-hmm.
about his opinions on things.
And he never admits that he's wrong about anything.
No.
And it makes me wonder, because we're talking on a emotional and spiritual level today about why he resonates with people. And I think in some ways, Jason, people see themselves in her envy him.
I know
they want to be the person.
I don't agree.
That never,
people have been saying that they see themselves in him.
No, he's what they want to be. They want to be somebody who doesn't ever apologize.
I don't agree. They see a white heterosexual Christian guy that got famous and got rich, and they think that they can be like him.
But don't you think that there are a lot?
That's me. I look like that.
There are a lot of people who wish that they could just go from wife to wife or do this or that or whatever other alleged things he's done with alleged people and not be held accountable and be able to say, I'm amazing in the face of facts saying he's not and people still believe it. I think there are a lot of people that wish they could get away with what he gets away with.
That's hard. That's hard for me to comprehend. That anybody,
I think so.
I don't know. Now we're getting into our opinions.
Well, that is an opinion. I mean, obviously we're not going to do a show and not do an opinion today.
Right.
But that is an
opinion.
But
that is now that we go.
That is a conclusion that I think I'm coming to more and more. Because in the beginning, I was just like, I don't understand what somebody who works in a coal mine in West Virginia looks at him and sees, oh, yeah, this is my guy who's probably never worked a day of hard labor in his life and who represents what all of their bosses
have been even like. That. My friend Ernie always says, you know, coal is no longer a viable way of getting clean air and a viable way of using as an infrastructure to create power. They use now, what I'm to understand, coal at the top of mountaintops, and there's other ways to do it. And even if they bring a coal back, there's more modern ways to do it. And the more modern ways it becomes, the less people that they need to do it.
Right, exactly.
There's a 60 Minutes with a senator, I believe out of, or rather a governor out of Arkansas, I can't remember his name, a heavyset fellow who with glasses, I can see him now, but I can't remember his name, and he had decided to bring factory work back to his state. So he found a factory that was open, a space, and he decided to build helicopters there. So he created a program with the community college so they would learn how to work the computers, to learn how to work in this factory that was very inexpensive, so people could do, take courses to learn this job. He got all the permits and created the space, and he vied to get this job, and he got it and brought it back. But only a fourth of the jobs were available because everything is done by machine. So this idea that we're going to bring factory jobs back does not exist in the right. same way.
Right.
But yet there are other jobs that have created from, you know, new, you know, Google, you know, Apple,
sure.
all
sure.
these other great big companies.
Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon. I think that and I bring it up, obviously, because the movement was started the day after the election, it comes up on the show a lot. Also, I think it's hard not to look at the events leading up to and after the election and his inauguration and not sort of wonder what it was that has put our country in such turmoil. I think just as people...
Before that?
Well...
And why they felt... Well, I know, because I can totally see it. I'll ask a question. My cousin and I, who are about the same age, grow up, and he sees things completely different than I do. He'll always bring race into it in the sense that he'll bring other racial things. He'll say, why are... You know, he can't understand that black people, specifically black men in a certain age group, teenagers to 20s to early 30s, are being murdered. And he said, well, black-on-black crime. I said, well, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about police people in a very large amount, enough that people are frightened. I know black friends that have children that are frightened, and they have to all have that speech with their son. It's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And so this is this, and he'll want to go off on other tangents about other things. He'll say, well, they argue or they do this. I said, it doesn't matter. They are being, I said, I don't know a friend who is a male and is black that is a friend of mine. I don't know one black male friend that hasn't been stopped by the police. And black women too, but it seems to be much higher percentage with black men and that are getting murdered. And that they're catching on camera doing it. And they're saying, well, being a police officer is a very good job. Now, I think most police officers are probably terrific.
Yeah.
I think a large percentage are. But there's enough of them that mm-hmm. are not.
Like in any position of power.
Yes.
Sometimes it attracts power-hungry, creepy people.
Or people that just are completely stressed out and not able to make good decisions.
Sure.
And murder someone with that wrong, you know, there's a difference between being a racist and doing racist things.
Yes.
And I think some people don't realize that they're doing racist things.
I agree.
Because they've been brainwashed.
Or thinking in a racist way. I think we learned, even I learned as a woman after this election, all kinds of misogyny that I didn't notice before.
Well, before you go into that, we'll talk about that, but I hate to run your show, but I just want to say this other thing about it. I feel very, very strongly about it, just because, you know, I have very close people to me that have children, and when I hear them and I see the look in their face, you know, and if I had a child and I had to deal with that, and I think it's really important for people to know who are listening to this, that they'll go off another tangent, and my cousin did. I wish he was listening to this today. That it doesn't have anything to do with behavior. There's a certain innate fear that you've had your whole life. And we're talking 50 years ago, people were still being hung. 150 years ago, people, you know, we're not allowed to learn to read, to learn to... I mean, we're still... There's still that kind of... endemic?
Oh, yeah. Systemic?
Systemic, forgive
me. Yes.
Systemic racism.
Yes.
That has become okay.
Mm-hmm.
They'll say, they're doing it to themselves. But they don't ever say white on white crime, and more white men have killed white people than any black person.
I know.
You know, or killed their wife. You know, so there are more white people than there are people of color in this country. So there's no way to even have this discussion because there just are more numbers.
Yeah.
So there is no, you know, conversation within that.
And I agree. And then the reason I brought up the misogyny, and we can talk about that in a minute, is that I was going to make the comparison to the racism. That I think, like you said, there are people who would tell you they are the most liberal, equality-driven people. They really don't know that they have, you know...
But this is a different thing. And maybe we'll differ on this.
Okay.
Because this is a different thing. We're, I'll use the word again, systemically raised to, as men, to be hunters.
Okay.
We are encouraged to be hunters. And women are encouraged to be gatherers. Your body parts are inside your body.
Yeah.
Our body parts are outside their body.
Yeah.
So that has a lot to do with it. I think that to say that people are misogynists right now is a difficult thing for me to say, because I think that we have had this okayness in our society as human beings for such a long time.
Sure.
Women have only been able to vote for 100 years.
Sure.
Or was it 1920?
Just 100 years.
21, I
no,
think?
I think it was 17, right? Wasn't it 100 years last year?
Yeah. So, and also, my mother, when she got divorced, had been told me that she women were not even allowed to go into a bank. I remember in 1977 when she got divorced, she said 1973 is when women were allowed to open up their own bank account. So it's so... To say that a man is misogynist is, to me, what we're doing is we're saying he's doing this purposely. And I don't think, I think it's, we're raised this way. I mean, look at movies. The most beautiful women are in movies. And are we allowed to use the F word here?
If you need to.
And there's a whole thing about fuckability. Even Amy Schumer did a whole sketch on her show with Julia Louis-Dreyfus turning 50 and that she's no longer fuckable, and they put her on a boat and she drives, they're letting her sail off into the sunset because it's over.
Yeah.
So we set up this whole, my whole industry about that. And then women play into it too. There is, women have a part in this. And they're just as brainwashed as all of us.
Yeah.
So to call people names and put names on people so early in this new Time's Up and Me Too, I think is the wrong way to handle it. Because we have to relearn as humans to be equal. We can't even... Women, there's more women in this country than there are men.
I know, we're biologically the majority.
We cannot pass an equal rights amendment for women.
I know.
That says something. And, like, I was reading this whole thing about Aziz Ansari, and I read a piece that was written in this Babe magazine or website that a girlfriend had shown to me. I was mortified at the details that this young woman told this magazine about this situation, about this famous guy.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, it's a he said, she said moment. Is with the way I saw it, even the way she wrote it. Folks want to read it and have a different thing. And I thought, wow. So he finds this beautiful girl. She becomes enamored with him. Tells all, and even in the article, she says, I'm going out with this famous guy. What should I wear? Da-da-da. I mean, she says it totally openly. It's like, I snagged this guy. She goes out on a date. They have dinner or drinks or whatever it is. They take a walk. It's very romantic. He says, come up to my house. Now, everybody knows come up to my house means sex might happen.
Sure. But it doesn't.
You do not go up to somebody's apartment, hotel, house, unless you're somewhat thinking about that. You're in a private place where there's a bedroom where somebody lives.
Okay.
And I think in this day and age, most people, you don't go into a guy's house unless you want to deal with that. They take off their clothes. They both give each other oral sex. It says that in there. She sort of says, I'm fighting him off and I don't want to do it. But then she gives him oral sex and she kisses him. She said, I didn't want to. He says, okay, let's stop. They go over the couch. They go over the couch to stop and they're still naked. She doesn't get dressed. She waits. There's a whole evening that goes on. And this is a 22-year-old woman, girl, it was last year, 2017. And It's hard to understand for a man, me, why a woman would put herself in that position. Then I'm hearing all the women screaming at me now. Mm. Well, this guy is successful. She feels that he could help her career. You know, he has more power over her. You know, okay, but why do you have to go up to the house with him? Why would you go into the room with him? I guess me being a gay man, I am so aware of anybody ever trying to physically harm me, because that's where I come from. So if I go into a hotel room, I am ready.
And I am too, but I was also raised by somebody who taught me to be ready.
I wasn't raised by anybody who taught me that. I was raised by wolves. No one taught me anything.
My
about
mom
sex.
Very because my mom had been date raped by somebody and she didn't even expect it.
Well, my mom said, you know, my mom was 17 when she got married. We are similar, and she says that, you know, she got pregnant and, you know, she didn't know what she was doing. She got drunk and da da da, and she married a guy she hardly knew.
Yeah,
you know, so. But I understand that a lot of women will disagree with me on this. And I understand their point of view, that they feel that if somebody is so rich and powerful that they have to do whatever he says. I still don't get that completely. Maybe you can school me.
I think
maybe all the other men that are listening, because there's three to four parts or five parts of this. There's a man verbally harassing you.
Right.
A man touching you inappropriately.
Right.
Like the Jeffrey Tambor thing where they were off to the side and they got the gal said that he hugged me and his penis touched the side of my hip. Now, if I hug you right now, my penis will touch you.
You probably hugged me a lot and your penis has touched me.
Right.
I feel like we're a lot more intimate than I ever thought
about. Possibly, unless you do the A hug.
Right.
That you can do that. Maybe he hugged her too long. But was that enough for him to get kicked off his show?
I mean, as
and not and that he was an asshole at times, or not the nicest guy, or so that he said moody. You know, was that enough for someone to lose his job? I don't know. I'm not saying, you know, I don't know. I wasn't there, so I don't have enough of an opinion. I know Jeffrey, and I've never known him to be a disrespectful man to women. And then the third part of that is actually forcing somebody physically, holding them, you know, doing something
sure.
that would be molestation.
Right.
Where the girl says, no, don't touch me there.
Right.
And he doesn't stop. And then, of course, the fifth is the worst, which is rape. And then maybe there's a fourth, which is rape. But the fifth is probably people who, the Louis C.K. thing, who don't touch you but ask you to watch them masturbate or touch themselves or show up naked, which I think is bizarre. But there is when that happens, there is a way to just go, I guess we're done here.
Yes.
And certainly if he had not done it at work, I would not have said anything, but he did it at work. And when you do it at work, that means he's the head guy at his job.
Yeah.
You know, or but if it's a coworker and they can't lose a job, then it's different. I would guess.
I think the
problem
is... It
depends on whether you would lose your job, does it? I mean, I think all these elements matter, don't they? Or do we put them all into one pot?
I think the problem is when the pushback starts, sometimes there's an overcorrection until it flips back to where it's supposed to be. Just like I said, like so many Democrats since the election have now decided we're going to fight back for the first time and not be who Bill Maher says we are, which is true, we have been that. That
and then they got rid of Al Franken.
Now they're screaming no peace because we're at war.
One of the best senators that we've ever had.
I think women are trying to fight back and are not used to it. And there is so it's a couple of things. One is women are just trying to find their voice and tell the truth about a lot of men and women who have been creepy sexual bullies.
But they want to do it publicly rather than going to the person, which I don't understand.
Well, I think a lot of them were very scared by some of the bigger producers with more money.
Right. Now, I'm talking about somebody, you know, like this woman with Aziz Ansari.
And then you also have to remember that...
Why would they do that publicly?
People just do things publicly to get attention. We live in a world where everyone wants their story.
How will that help the movement?
It's not about helping the movement. It's about it helping them. Not everybody who jumps on board a movement is there for the right reasons.
Right.
You know, I don't know her, and I don't know her story.
I don't know her, and I don't know her story.
But either. I do know that women... let's give women the benefit of the doubt. Let's say it's just because women are a product of their own 10,000 years of oppression. Women can be very, very manipulative.
I mean, we need Harvey Weinstein. Certainly, there's no. I mean, after somebody saying, "Hey, he raped me,"
yeah.
That's when I go, "Okay, I believe that woman."
Yeah.
But when I hear a woman that says, "Hey, he said these things to me." Now, Angelina Jolie talked about that, and she says, "I'm never working for this company again."
Right.
There was a situation, I believe, that was verbal, and then maybe a little handsy.
Yeah.
But handsy and pushing someone up against the wall and not letting them leave are two different things.
Yeah. But in, like you said, in a work situation,
right.
Handsy is wrong.
And she was, yes.
If you're working on somebody's
handsy
set.
In a work situation, to me, means you go down to the... you know, whatever department, and you say, hey, or you talk to somebody of power over him, or you decide not to work there again.
Right. Well, I think it's good.
Kevin Spacey, I'll give you. I mean, he did this stuff at work.
Yeah.
He did it in the London Theater. There were over 20 people. He did it on a set. You know, there were all these people that said he did this at work. That was totally like,
yeah,
it's okay that he's fired from this job. I mean, Louis C.K. is just totally weird to me. I don't understand that. I can't comprehend either side of why one would... I guess it's just... I don't know what to do with that. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
But handsy and verbal should be handled within the company or make... But the other two, certainly there's no place in our society for that.
No.
But then at the same time, you know... Women have got to be treated as equals.
Absolutely. Well, and you have to think about this. Let's talk
and they're
about
just not.
Tansy and verbal for a second. I agree with what you're saying, although oftentimes what's happened, and let's just speak within our industry, Jason, because this is the industry
we work in. It's happened to me. I can tell you the handsy thing.
Honey, it's happened to me with women. Women have done it to me. No man's ever sexually harassed me.
Oh, I've had tons.
But women have.
Tons of... I've had more straight men harass me.
And I've had more...
In the comedy world.
Gay women harass me.
I've had club owners say things to me that weren't appropriate. I've had guys smack my ass. I've had somebody, you know, grab me or all sorts of things.
Uh-huh.
But I
understand it exists.
It was part of the job in the comedy world because it's a boys' club. And you have to be able to, and most of the time, it was done by straight men. I'd say almost all. I can't even remember a gay guy doing it because the gay guys could not get away from me faster because... They don't want you. People don't want you. Most of them were in the closet.
I try not to break things down by gender. And when I wrote my own Me Too post about being harassed by women, which I'm sure other women didn't appreciate, but I'm sorry, it's the truth. And that's my story. And people need to know it's not just men. I kind of break it down.
Well, the lesbian world is very not sexuality isn't discussed very much.
Well, and it's also
outside of you all.
Well, we all. I'm not we all because I'm bisexual. And they treat us very differently.
But that side of yourself in that community, I don't hear women in the lesbian community talk about this very much.
About harassment?
Yes.
No, because it has to be all a girls' club and all for one and
exactly.
One for all.
It's very.
I also was in a lesbian relationship where I was physically abused, and
right.
We don't talk about that either.
No.
You should see the look in the community when you say that, like it doesn't exist. But I've been in public situations where a woman has thrown her girlfriend out of a bar and beat the crap out of her on the street.
But I've seen that.
But then all the friends kind of cover it up like it didn't happen.
Yeah, because there's a girl, women kind of thing where they all
right.
protect each other.
Exactly.
And the gay guys never want to talk about
fighting. Which is fine unless you're protecting abuse within a system.
Men never talk about fighting gay men because they don't want to seem weak.
Right. So I think that you have to break it down to within all human beings. There are predator bullies of both genders.
Oh, definitely.
It's sad that it's mostly men, but I think that has to do a lot more with how men and women have been culturalized throughout the history of humanity.
It's sad that it's also mostly men in terms of...
It's mostly men that are sexually harassing people.
Oh, well, it's because it's our society.
That's what I'm going to say,
We are taught. We're taught to hunt.
Yeah.
We're taught to do that. I think that there's got to be a reteaching and a reckoning. And I think men have to, you know, and I've got to say most of the men that have done these major things are over 40.
Yeah.
Which is a nice sign of saying that younger men don't seem to buy into this in the same way. And what's really interesting, and I hate to say this, is that most of the men that are being caught for this are not classically attractive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think women have to be careful about that. So if a man is not attractive in a classically way, and the ones that are, you know, if Brad Pitt comes on to you and Harvey Weinstein does, who are you going to say yes to?
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of it, too. So if somebody tries to date above their pay grade, you know, there's that problem, too. So where somebody who is considered, I'll use that word again, fuckable, they're allowed to cross the line whenever they want because they're hot.
Yeah. Well, don't you think, and I learned this when I worked in radio for many, many years, in when I worked on the Howard Stern station, where it was a very, very sexualized experience, that a lot of the people that were in management were sort of these, you know, nerdy boys that probably
exactly.
the football players beat up. And now they got all the power, and they can have all the girls, and they become kind of this, the worst case scenario of what that should have been. Because to me, if you were bullied, and I was bullied as a kid, I was the fat kid, I grew up kinder and less of a bully for that experience, but some people grow up and become a worse bully for that experience.
Or not even a bully, just somebody who feels like, you know, I'm in. I can do whatever I want now.
Right, but you're a bully
in the same way that this is where it's going to shake up things in a lot of ways, I believe. To go to the top of this thing, you know, is that if Melissa McCarthy comes on to somebody, is it the same as Julia Roberts?
I guess we're going to learn that.
You know, so is Zach, what's his name? Zach Hairspray, Zac Efron.
Oh, yeah.
Comes on to you. Do you treat him the same way that you treat, you know, Zach Galifianakis?
Right.
Who's allowed?
I think it's just...
Is Noah... Is Jonah Hill allowed to come on to you? Or is Issa Sari? But when Zac Efron does, sure, this is just... You know, maybe you realize that you weren't as attracted to them when you met them. They're just guys.
Well, but I do
think... And they're not this... You know, that's
I have to disagree with you there because
that's what
I
it sounded like in that article to me.
Throughout the history of time, I mean, if you look at a film like The Hunting Ground about college campuses, you see that oftentimes it's the great-looking quarterback who's raping everybody.
Well, that's a different thing because that's the sports world. And that's a whole different spectrum of this.
So I don't think
where we encourage these sports guys to behave in a certain way, and we allow them to. That's a whole sector.
I don't think it has anything to do with looks, except that I believe that.
Oh, I do. I think it's a testosterone thing of those kind of guys that are in sports that are put on pedestals.
Oh no,
colleges.
I'm talking about in the entertainment business.
I don't agree because I've heard girls talk. I, you know, being a gay guy, I hear everything.
Yeah, but I
never hear a girl go, God, I would lay it down for this one.
Yeah, but still, I think if somebody got real creepy and rapey, it would be different. There's a different energy.
I don't think that people see those people as creepy and rapey. That's what I'm saying.
I do.
I think it's much more, you know, about someone that they're not as... And when it comes to, you know...
But what about Kevin Spacey? He's a nice-looking guy.
He's an okay-looking guy.
I mean, he's not...
He's like 58, 59 years old.
Yeah, but he's been doing it since he was born.
I don't hear any gay guys going, hey, I can't wait to get with... I never hear that. I've never heard it once, ever.
I think we're going to...
He's an average-looking guy.
I think we're going to find in time
but I do
that
think
it's
that
not a looks thing.
I don't agree. I think the looks thing gives certain guys a free pass.
I don't think so. I think we're gonna see a lot more as things
I could
out.
Be wrong.
Look at Matt Lauer. Remember how everybody talked about how beautiful he was? Wasn't he sexiest
true.
Man alive?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think.
Okay.
I think you're right that
it's a partial. It's a partial.
Yeah,
thing.
I think that.
But
there
it's also the real dangerous thing of that. You're right. I have to backtrack and go. You're right. You proved me wrong. But I think there is a partial thing about that that's sort of fascinating because we set this up and we give these people who look a certain way a certain get out of free
absolutely
card.
In life we do that.
Yes. And those guys are allowed to behave a certain way where the others aren't. So what, I guess as we talk about it and as I think about it deeper, so those guys that work at Silicon Valley that grew up being the dorky guys that people picked on and couldn't get the girl, now they're rich and famous.
Right.
And now they got that.
Right.
So some women wouldn't have looked at them twice.
Right. Absolutely.
So we sort of set up these rules of how, you know, we're supposed to do stuff. And then the other guys who don't get the girls because of the way they look, because they're just a guy that, you know, is the manager of a post office or whatever their job is, they don't get the girl, and they get handsy with the guys, and then they go, well, why can't I? You know, where is the lines?
Right. And but that's, they need to learn that,
and
you can't,
and we're in a world that's not fair and even.
Yes, we are, absolutely. And you just can't put your hands on somebody because you feel like it.
Right.
And I also think that there is just a certain kind of, look, I understand that guys that are considered less attractive by society have to have a little more game and try harder, and sometimes they become wealthy because that gives them more game.
You know what it is? It's Truman Capote's book In Cold Blood. In the book, he says, Perry walked out the back door, I walked in the front, we were exactly alike. The only difference was that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people thought it was a sexual thing they were talking. It's not. It's about class, and it's about money, and it's about what's fair, and it brings us back to Donald Trump. It's about the idea that it's have and have not.
Absolutely.
And when you don't have, it creates men who feel like they're not enough.
Yeah.
And they want to get the pretty girl that we put in the movie, who we decide is classically the kind of woman that we want in this world.
Yeah.
It's really difficult. This is probably so deep.
I agree.
Is probably deeper than anything.
And I don't fault any guy for taking his best shot with anybody he wants to take a shot with. But when somebody is saying, you know, down on your knees or you'll never work in this town again.
Right.
That's a personality I take.
Or if it's anybody at any job saying, if you don't do this,
because
this may not happen for you.
Yeah.
I mean, when I hear about what happened with Mira Savino and Ashley Judd at the height of their careers, two beautiful girls, height of their careers, you know, and how their careers basically took a dive into supporting roles in television.
Yeah.
Without giving them...
Rose McGowan.
I don't know the trajectory of her career as much, and whether she was at the same...
She was heading there.
But Mira Sorvino won an Oscar. Ashley Judd had been in some of the biggest movies and was the lead in action films. Yeah, I think they had a different kind of career. Rose was always a sex kitten in most of her roles. So it's not the same in terms of box office. She was never a box office star.
Right.
You know, so she didn't have Oscars.
Well, maybe she never got to that level because it's happened before that.
Maybe so.
And she wound up taking a lot of B-movie stuff.
These two women were being considered for major because of what they had accomplished.
Sure.
So it's different. They're in a different point of their careers. And then they told Peter Jackson, who did the... Lord of the Rings series, not to consider them. That's major. Because that's so much money and so much fame and so much everything. That's different. Rose was an actress, young ingenue, on the way up.
Yeah.
And certainly, from the get-go, treated incredibly inappropriately and awful. She was raped.
Yeah.
You know, on her... In her first time at Sundance.
And so many actresses. I've been doing these Four Girl Politics shows, and Ray Dawn Chong was my regular. She does all my shows with me. And she told a story yesterday about how somebody, an agent, called her once at 9:30 at night she said it on the air, so it's not a secret, to go to Steven Seagal's room. And when she got there, he was walking around through the door. She could see him with his bathrobe open. And she called the agent and said, I'm not doing this, and left.
Good for her.
But... You know, then you spend your life wondering, if I had made different choices, would I have more of a career? And even though those aren't choices anybody wants to make, I think there's a desperation that's put into actors at a very young age. Do this, or you're never going to work again.
I do think if you're a woman and your career is about the way you look, you're going to have these choices to make. There is no choice. I've told every woman that I ever mentored or coached or helped that. So the discussion is how does that pendulum change where this is no longer about that. But it is. So it's hard to... I don't know how you... justify all this. How do you... When you go in and your sexiness is about how you get this job in show business, and then when you turn all these guys on, how does that not happen with men? I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's like you're waving this flag, and not that anybody deserves it.
No.
Or that they're, you know, it's like the whole idea, you know, she deserved it. None of them deserve it. Nobody deserves it, ever. Maybe make that clear. So if anybody takes this out of context, I am totally in agreement of that. But it does bring these thoughts into men's heads.
Yeah.
And sometimes their penis thinks before their head thinks. And that's, men think about sex every 10 seconds, they say, or every minute or something. It's very often.
Yeah.
I think about it all the time.
Sure.
Women don't as much. It's not the same.
But women do think about sex a lot more than people think.
But not to the degree, you know, in terms of what I hear through scientific information.
Women keep things much more internalized.
And you guys can do more stuff at once.
We don't talk about things.
You can do more things at once. You're much more multitask.
We can drive the minivan and think about sex at the same time.
But you also, you can do all these things where we're about success and hating ourselves and, you know, sex. That's always, you know, it's like, you know, that's why I think women should run the country, because I think they're just able, they just.
See, but that's the thing about women. We can think about hating ourselves and sex at the same time. All right, we'll take a quick break, then we're right back with the wonderful Jason Stewart. It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio, and we'll see you in just a few minutes. Go and find us at IamRaisingTheVibration.com. I'd love that.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Larry Russ, former keyboardist and vocalist for Iron Butterfly, and I'm here to tell you about that abuse is an epidemic in our world. Abuse has many forms, spousal and child abuse, sex and human traffic victims, and sexual abuse. Musicians Against Abuse wants to do something about it, and you can help. Contact maabuse.com. That's maabuse.com. Join me and let's do something about it. maabuse.com.
Alcohol-related harm affects us all. Everyone knows someone who's been touched. Alcohol-related harm ranges from lost jobs to serious mental and physical disease, from ruined family life to property damage, from violent crime to homelessness, death, or prison. Go to alcoholjustice.org and sign up for action alerts and e-news. Then you'll be ready to add your voice to many others when it's time to call for action that will reduce alcohol-related harm.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. So join me 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time at www.latalkradio.com on Channel 1. And let's explore All About Guitar.
When was the last time a song made a difference in your life? If you're a songwriter who would like to help the victims of the recent hurricanes, your music can make a difference. By offering one song download for just $1, you can help bring aid and hope to those in need. To find out more information and join songwriters Michelle Mangione and Grace Slick in this effort, please visit writersforthestorm.com. That's WRITERS forthestorm.com.
As difficult as it is to believe, There are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
When Debbie Fragner gave birth to Maddie, she imagined a world of possibilities. But when her daughter was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, a neurological condition that impacts a person's ability to move and maintain balance, she had to adjust her expectations. Cerebral palsy affects 1 in 323 children in the U.S. While this diagnosis may limit Maddie's physical abilities, it doesn't limit her ability to dream. Maddie is now 9 and has a dream to dance, which inspired the creation of the Children's Cerebral Palsy Movement, a nonprofit dedicated to the design and funding of innovative therapies that address not only the physical challenges of these children, but their dreams as well. As part of their Community Giving Day program, Whole Foods Market will donate 5% of net day sales to our movement on June 15th at their Tustin location and June 22nd in Newport Beach. Your purchases on these days will help further our cause. For more information, please call 714-746-4085. That's 714-746-4085.
Hi, my name is Michael Vaccaro. I have a groovy web series called Child of the 70s with some really groovy people in it, including Bruce Valanche, Jerry Jewell from The Facts of Life, Ted Lange from The Love Boat, comedian Judy Tenuta, Carolita White from Laverne and Shirley, Ann Walker from Sordid Lives, Amy Linga from Square Pegs, Gina Heck from Mork and Mindy. We have Johnny Hazard, Leo Forte, Terry Ray, Chuck Sakula, and LA Talk Radio legend Sheena Metal. I play this guy who idolizes a 1970s TV star, but then he gets a job as her personal assistant. You know how they say that you should never meet your personal idols? Well, you know, you can find us on YouTube, Funny or Die, Out TV, and you can also go to our website, www.theofficialchildofthe70s.com. It's groovy. Hey, did I say that already? Yeah, it's groovy. I'm a
child of the 70s. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
California legislator sends Bill SB 524 to Governor Brown to protect youth against institutional abuse. This bill would regulate residential programs notorious for abusing, attempting to convert LGBT youth. Let's be the change. Every child deserves to be treated with dignity and humanity. Stand with the Los Angeles LGBT Center and SEA organization against child abuse. Support SB 524. Go to PYIA.org and let your voice be heard.
Did you know that healthcare institutions provide arts programming for patients, families, and staff because of their healing benefits? Shorter hospital stays, better pain management, and less medication. Believe in the art. Go to www.mvcaf.org and click the donate button on any page. Support the Moreno Valley Cultural Arts Foundation.
I'm Sue Hamilton, and on November 9th, 2016, Artists Rise Up Los Angeles was created in response to the election and its results.
Through original theater and art, Arula creates and inspires positive political and social change.
And gives all its proceeds to charitable organizations such as ACLU and Planned Parenthood.
Join us
at artistriseupla.com
or on Twitter at artistriseupla.
Did you know that healthcare institutions provide arts programming for patients, families, and staff because of their healing benefits? Shorter hospital stays, better pain management, and less medication. Believe in the art. Go to www.mvcaf.org and click the donate button on any page. Support the Moreno Valley Cultural Arts Foundation.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's Raising the Vibration right here at LA Talk Radio. You can find us at raisingthevibrationradio.com, latalkradio.com. I'm at sheenametal.com. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. We're also at iamraisingthevibration.com. That's our movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity. And as soon as our nonprofit status comes through, we will be at raisingthevibration.org. How exciting is that? And we have a wonderful online community. We started on October 29th of 2017, and we are now over 12,000 strong there. Please join us. It's at thevibrationnation.com. You're welcome to post your thoughts and dreams and hopes and wishes and opinions about the world and about the United States and the kind of world you wish you lived in and your spirituality and your sociology and whatever floats your boat, your art, it's all welcome there at thevibrationnation.com. The wonderful Jason Stewart joins me all this show. It's great to have you here, my friend.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So what is one of your, what is your secret to staying positive in a world that oftentimes can be not positive, right?
Contrary action the most. When I feel really bad, to do something for somebody else.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, 100%.
When I do something for someone, like last night at my house, it was like Actor Central, you know, at a girlfriend of mine who is a voice teacher, came to my house from New York. She said, can I use your house to teach voice? I said, yes. She had four students in my dining room doing a voice class for 4 hours. One of the kids that I mentor, kids I say in his 20s, needed help with his demo reel. I was doing that.
Awesome.
Another friend of mine in her 30s who had an audition, I was coaching her. And then she ran my lines with me for the audition that I had this morning. And that's, and it completely got out of my little bit of a funk yesterday coming back. I went to go see a friend in a play, and I was just so tired going a 24-hour jaunt to Palm Springs, and I wanted a day off, but it didn't happen. So it was just a tired day, and it got me out of that, you know, that thing.
That's wonderful. Sometimes it just takes that, right? If I'm feeling sad or I'm upset or disappointed that something didn't happen, I kind of go into my computer and I make something happen. And then it takes away that disappointment.
How do you do it from your computer?
I make everything happen from my laptop.
Really?
I get involved in another project. I start something. I think of a thing and get rolling on it. And the next thing I know, I'm not disappointed about the thing that didn't happen anymore.
Huh.
Pulls me out of that.
Sweet.
Out of that blue place, you know? And when did you first get involved in mentoring? Tell my listeners something a little bit about
around
that.
Around 12 years ago, Michael Ferrara called me on the phone and said, Kirkland Teeples recommended me a producer and said, hey, we're doing this comedy benefit for LifeWorks Mentoring that mentors
sure, LifeWorks is wonderful.
Kids. And I said, well, do you have a venue? They said, no. I said, who are the other comedians? We don't have anybody. So I helped produce it for 6 years, and we became friends. And I started mentoring some kids from that. And then people would just, you know, as I got older, people would just show up and say, hey, can you help me out? And that actually went into a web series that I did with Paul Lya called Mentor.
Right, which is
now
brilliant.
Available on Amazon.
It's brilliant.
Prime, you can see that there. And what's really interesting about that is that when I first met Paul, he was in his early 20s.
Right.
And I thought that he was coming on to me.
Oh.
He was so flirtatious.
Yeah.
So I didn't get, and then he said, we should go out and have coffee or lunch, and I said, okay. And I didn't get, until I went out with him, when he was texting me and calling me, I thought, God, he's too young for me, but he's so cute. And then I thought, oh, this will be a little fling, maybe, or this, no, I can't. I just was so surprised that he was actually calling me, and it became episode 2 of Mentor, where it totally shows how you can misunderstand a situation.
Absolutely. Oh my God, I've misunderstood many situations just like that, where I thought somebody was interested in me and they were just interested in having somebody help them with something.
Right. That happens.
In a very good-natured way, not in a not good-natured way.
Well, I think Paul did. I think Paul knows how to be a flirt because he's.
Oh, he flirts with me when he comes. Yes, when he's on my show.
He is a very flirtatious man.
Yes,
in the most non-confrontational way.
Yes,
and it's his charm. Mm-hmm. You know, so
he makes you feel like you're the only person in the room
for the moment. Yes,
yeah, he's good at that,
and it isn't anything to do with sexuality for him. Whereas most people, I would think that.
Oftentimes, people don't put that kind of effort in mm-hmm. unless they're interested in obtaining something.
Well, he said to me, and so did Jake Hunter, who's another actor that I've mentored. He said, "You're the only gay guy that hasn't come on to me."
Oh,
I mean, I never came on to them. I just was, I because I guess I'm slow to figure out, you know, I like to know what's going on before I actually get in there, because I think I'm very careful about not being rejected, I guess.
Well, and I think some people just randomly come on to everybody they know without thinking about whether it's something that interests them or not.
Right. Paul said he went up to my IMDb page and saw that it had all these credits. He thought, oh, this is a guy I want to know. And I thought, I didn't know that. And I thought he wanted to know me because I was so hot.
Well, I'm sorry. But it's okay. A great web series
honestly,
came out of it, right?
Honey, the more I got to know him, I thought, oh, this guy's too young. He's straight, and I don't want any straight guys. And he, you know, when they're young and they start to talk, it's just too much.
So how many people do you think you've mentored, and how many folks do you have now?
God. They've come and go. I think around 20 people over the last 12 years.
It's wonderful.
From different degrees.
And different some lengths. Just,
pardon me?
Different lengths of time.
Yeah, and some still call me. Sometimes some people are just calling. Some people who become more a part of my life and become friends. Some people who I've worked with. Some people who come and go. And some people who completely drop you.
Yeah.
And that's the weirdest thing.
Girls and boys?
Men? Oh, yeah. Mostly guys, but I'd say there's a couple girls.
Yeah. Is it sort of like because you don't have kids?
No.
So
none
it's sort
that
of like,
I know of.
So it's sort of like having a family. It's like a little family.
I wouldn't
that
say
builds,
that.
No?
I'm saying it's like being an uncle.
Okay. That's but isn't that having a family, being an uncle?
I don't know, because I come from such a crazy family, I don't even know what that means. That's the truth, honestly.
Yeah. I don't come from any family. So to me, family is whatever I make of it.
I guess so, yeah.
And it's whatever feels good. Both my best friends have kids. Each have a child, so I consider them to be my niece and my nephew.
I have a niece that's coming back into my life, I think.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure, that never was in my life, that I wasn't allowed to know.
Oh.
Because my sister is an Orthodox Jew and sort of left our family.
Okay.
25 years ago.
How old was she when she became Orthodox?
I think around 30.
Okay. Do you know what her reason for it was? Why that pulled her in that direction?
No. Honestly, I don't really know, because we never had that specific conversation. But when my father passed 5 years ago, my father's wish was that we would become close.
Okay.
And that just wasn't possible. She came to my house twice to drop off a video and then to drop off some photographs. Was very nice about that. And the more we talked, the more I realized that I don't know who this person is. 20 years had passed, and
yeah.
It's not anybody I know. And she still wasn't interested in me being in her life in any respectful kind of way.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, but...
But the niece, maybe...
Yeah, she doesn't want to be an Orthodox Jew, and she has been contacting people in our family.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. I'm, of course, a little trepidatious.
Yeah, I am too. My mom wanted so badly to be family with both her birth family and her adopted family, and nobody was ever interested in being family, and it broke her heart. So after she passed... I became Facebook friends with my natural cousin, my natural aunt's son, and we chit-chat a little bit, and I thought he would know more about the family when I went back to Kentucky to take mom's ashes where my grandmother was, who died when she was 5. He knew less than I knew, because his mother wouldn't talk about it at all. And then one of my cousins, of her adopted sister's daughter, and found me, and we'd been chit-chatting a little bit. She's in Vegas. So I went and found...
Chit-chatting means online.
Online and texting. So,
But not a lot of verbal talking.
No, I think people...
See, I think that's a big problem.
People have different levels of boundary. I've kind of thrown my number out there to both of them and said, if you want to talk, call me.
But I think, to me, it makes it very, very difficult to have any sort of real relationship with someone if you don't talk to them.
I just feel like everything happens in its own time, mm-hmm. and they can take all the time they need.
I think texting changes that. I think it's completely changed it.
I think some people like to keep a little distance.
I understand, and I think that's why it's changed.
And that's okay with me if everybody moves in their own.
It's okay. It's not okay with me because I don't want to have texting relationships with people.
Right.
I don't know. It's just, unless I know you and we're close, and then I can text with you all the time. But if I don't, I don't want that. I feel too much is easily misunderstood. It's not real. I don't know. It just makes me uncomfortable. Because they don't understand my sense of humor or my, you know, how I say things or, I don't know. I just feel uncomfortable with having a texting relationship with someone who I've never met in person or who I've never actually had phone conversation with at the very least.
I think from being a radio host, I've become very sensitive and empathic to meeting people where they're at.
Mm.
And sometimes,
well,
if you're
being on the radio, you're actually texting with people in some odd way. It's just your voice,
right.
And it's one way, so it's almost that way.
Right.
For me, it's also being, you know, in my small modicum of success. You know, it's there. People have wanted to have that kind of relationship with me from all over the world.
Right,
hitting me up on Facebook specifically quite a bit. I get it almost every week, and people will call and say, "Hey, what's up?" And I don't know them, and they want to. I don't know what to do with those other than say, "Hey, you know, what can I do for you?" I don't know. You know, and a lot of them. Either 50% are fans and the 50% are prostitutes and terrorists.
And oh, okay.
It's a lot of women.
Yeah, I have a lot of Nigerian boyfriends that all have $14 million in gold bars
that
they're going to inherit as soon as I marry them.
Oh, how fabulous.
Yeah, but and the interesting, all of them live in Ohio and they're widowed. But they don't speak any English because they're from a part of Ohio where English is not the first language.
People call you, too, on that.
Yeah, people call me. It has that weird Facebook ring.
Yeah, I don't know how they get your number.
They call you through Facebook.
But does that mean they know your number?
No, it rings through your Facebook account. You're actually talking to them through Facebook like if you talk through Skype.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I didn't mean people like that. I mean, these are actual people texting.
Well, when they're actual fans.
They're actually really my cousins.
I answer every single Facebook thing myself.
Yes, good for you. I wish I could. I try to get to everybody, but I get so busy because I have, you know,
well, I do it
so
all at once.
Yeah.
And then they'll all hit you up at once, and then you can't really have, you know, conversations.
Right. Right. Yeah. My point is that with family, you tread a little gently and you just wait and see. We'll see. So I have three cousins now. Well, two cousins and my cousin's wife, because my other cousin is a cop, so he doesn't have Facebook.
But they live in Kentucky, right?
No, none of them. My aunt that was from Kentucky moved to Texas.
So he's in Texas. They don't live in the Los Angeles area.
No. My other cousin's in Vegas. My aunt moved to Vegas when I was in junior high. My adopted aunt. And then from my mom's adopted family. And then her brothers were both in upstate New York, which is where my mom
is. It's hard to have relationships, too, with people that live in a different place. And you never.
I think it's easy. One of my best friends has lived, in the time we've been friends, since she moved out of California almost, I think, over 10 years. She lived in Scottsdale. Then she lived in Ohio. Then she lived in Austin. Then she was back in Ohio. And now she's in Ithaca, New York. And, you know, we talk on the phone for hours, and it's like she's here. Honestly, she's in New York, and my two best friends in the world are both in Orange County, and we all talk on the phone. I mean, I see them more. I only see her a couple times a year when she comes
out
here.
Orange County is like a different world.
Right, so it's all just talking on the phone.
Right.
It's just, that's just what a lot of life is now. You know, everybody's in their own place and living in their own place.
Isn't it really weird to think that 100 years ago, if you and I were brothers and sisters and we moved and I moved away and you lived in New York and I lived in L.A., I probably wouldn't see you again.
Ever again, yeah.
Yeah.
Strange, isn't it? We just write letters.
Yeah.
I do think that's very strange. But that's why that's wonderful. You know, my mom and I talked on the phone so much because we tried to talk every day. I couldn't always be in Orange County.
My mom and I talk almost every day.
That when she passed, it was interesting because our connection was always so psychic that when she passed, it's not all that much different now.
You say that a lot, psychic, and I don't always know what that means.
Well, it was a very intuitive connection with the two of us.
But that, isn't that different than psychic? Or how it's a form of...
It's a form of psychic, yeah.
Yeah.
My mother had every form of psychic, so she was just... But she sort of raised me to sort of have this intuitive connection with her in addition to our emotional connection and our physical connection. And so when she passed, we still have that intuitive connection. So it's not all that much different than when she was alive. That's, I think that's a hard thing for people to wrap their brains around sometimes.
So how does that manifest for you?
I hear her all the time. We stay in a lot of touch. And because we always sort of stayed in touch like that.
How do you hear her?
I hear her in my head.
Right. And what does she say?
She says, kill the dog. No, she doesn't. She says a lot of the things she says.
My God.
She would think that was hysterical. Uh-huh. She says a lot of the things that she says when she was alive.
She had said before. So you're hearing her voice of her. You're hearing her essence is now a part of you.
That is for sure. But she also, I don't know if you believe in.
I saw my father. Did I tell you that?
You did tell me that.
Yeah, it was really freaked me out because I've never been a person who thought that was possible for me.
Yeah.
And I think I'm very intuitive and connected.
And I think you are too. I think you're more than you even know.
Yeah, I don't know how to manifest it though.
Right. She does.
Who's she?
My mother.
Oh.
Who's she? We have a lot of conversations.
You've always threatened to be with me and teach me a little of that.
I'd be happy to teach you as much of it as you want.
I would love to be able to feel that more.
She stays in really good touch with me, and she's much more now like she was when I was young than she was as she got old.
I don't hear much from my dad. And I remember when Birth of a Nation came out, it was such a big deal for me. And I knew that my dad would just be so happy for me.
I'm sure he was.
And, you know, I believe that when you leave this planet in the physical form that you're in, you never leave. I don't believe there's heaven and hell.
Okay.
I believe heaven and hell is here.
Okay.
You have hell moments. You have hell, you know, you have heaven moments. You have hell moments. And it all, I think they just didn't get when they wrote it down. People just interpreted. We, you know, believe everything with beginning, middle, and end.
Right. So we like the little red guy with the pitchfork.
I met, you know, Sheena at a certain time to do her show. We talked in the middle, and then we left, and that was the end.
Yeah.
So, but... You know, this idea that that's the way the world is not true. I don't think we ever leave. I just don't think we understand how to communicate with the people that are no longer in physical form.
I do believe that. I do believe there is a dimension, a place that we go. Place sounds weird because that makes it sound like it's of the earth. But I do think there
is
a place.
Well, it is here. It's like if we were. It's like if we shut off the lights, and we were able to see how everything connects. That's the way I sort of see it in my mind. And now that I'm getting older, I thank God, I hope that what I think is true, because how weird it would be to just everything to turn to black and then that was it.
Yeah, I think about that too, what a trip that would be if we were all wrong.
Well, I bet we're wrong about a lot of stuff. I think there's so much we don't know, and scientists have said that we don't use a large part of our brain, and now since the... Industrial Revolution. Excuse me. The Industrial Revolution. We're using so much more of our brain than we ever did. But I do believe that it's a little overwhelming at times.
I agree.
That we're not, you know, Apple sort of is a perfect example of that. They create a product, and before they even know how to work it, they send it out into the world.
Yes. Well, and I think that since computers, we're using a different, less of our brain. We don't remember things like we used to because we don't have to. We have everything at our disposal.
But we have other things to remember.
We don't memorize phone numbers anymore. We don't memorize. I mean, how many phone numbers do you know by heart?
Just my mother's and an old actress friend of mine, Joey Magadow, because she has the same number, and that's it.
Yeah, I know my ex-boyfriend's. That is the same his cell phone. And I know my mother's number, which is now a cell phone of mine. And I know my numbers.
What, you have your mom?
I have my mom's cell phone and her home phone.
Why?
Well, the home phone, because people still call. You know, people call her from school and stuff looking for her. And the cell phone because, I don't know, I just wanted it. Wasn't ready to turn it off. I needed an extra line for something, and I thought that was a good one to have.
Oh, that's nice. Mm-hmm. You're using it. But the house phone, you got to let that go.
Well, no, because that's been her number, and that was my number for years. I mean, we've had that house for 40 years.
Where does that number go?
It goes to a cell phone now. I forwarded it to a cell phone.
How many cell phones do you have?
I have 3 cell phones. Well, I use one for my life, and I use one for work, and I use one for my spiritual work.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay,
so and they're my original cell phone that I've had since 94, my home number that I'd had since 90, that now is a cell phone.
I'm using the same phone number that I've used since 81, that was originally my house phone.
Well, and my mom's number we've had since 80. So
okay,
yeah,
you beat me by the ear.
Because you know it's easier to do that than to get a whole number, and I like people to know where I am.
I always change my cell number because I was always getting a better plan, so I never had
I've never changed mine. And now they'll transfer it over to whatever plan you get.
Which is lovely. Remember when 213 was so great? You could have a 213. You wanted a 213. Nobody wanted to be in the Valley.
Oh, God. I defiantly wanted an 818 because I was so in love with Sherman Oaks. The first time I came here, I was so enchanted with it. And I literally came here the next day, came back and looked at a house, and within a month had bought that house.
I remember when 818 came about. That's how long I lived here.
I was in Orange County then.
Yeah. Well, yours was 714?
Yeah. We moved here in 80.
Oh, that's all you wanted, 818. Because 714 was so not cool.
Nobody wants.
And now nobody cares what your number is.
I know.
I have so many friends that have numbers from out of town when they live someplace else.
And they don't change them anymore. I remember you'd come here and you'd change your number on purpose.
No. My brother has a number from Vegas when he used to live there.
It's awesome.
Crazy.
Everything has gotten... Technology has leveled a lot of our playing field.
In
which I think
way,
is a good thing.
Has, yes.
You know, we're not so. We're all becoming these almost sort of men and women behind the curtain, and our avatars are the ones we show to the world. In some ways, that's a little creepy, but in some ways, it's leveled that playing field a lot.
I want to get past the memories of being a kid that was bullied and not putting that in other people because of certain behavior. Do you understand? You know, there's a psychic, as you would say, there's a psychic feeling that happens when you meet certain people of power and they manipulate how comfortable you are.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah. Does that still bother you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's the thing I'd like to change about
myself.
I'm
letting it go more and more. This is my... Last year was the year of getting out of my comfort zone, and did I? And this year is the year of not caring what people think. It's a tough one for me, but I'm really working on it.
Oh.
And a lot of it is that sometimes you just have to walk away from that kind of... There are always going to be people that want to bully you. There are always going to be people that want to take advantage of you, that want to manipulate you. For some people, it's just in their nature. It has nothing to do with it being you. It just has to do with you're the one standing in front of them right now.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really trying to work through that and just not care anymore. It's hard, but I'm getting there.
I try not to involve myself with people I don't want to be that aren't kind.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah.
So I don't care what they think.
That aren't kind to me and that aren't kind to other people.
Yes. You watch how they treat the waiter. That's what they say.
Exactly.
That's the way to do it.
Watch how they treat everybody.
Exactly.
Watch how they treat their other friends. And that was a hard lesson for me, I would say, when I was in my early 30s, that my mom really taught me, which was to stop listening to what people said and start watching what they were doing.
My father told me that always.
And sometimes you get a much different...
Well, Maya Angelou has the greatest quote, of course, that says, when people show you who they are, believe them the first time.
Yeah.
A lot of people just do the quote, when people show you who they are, believe them. But the really most important is, believe the first time.
Yeah.
And that's the truth. And sometimes it's something you can go, hey, this isn't cool for me, and they will change.
Yeah.
And if they don't, that's it.
How Jewish were you raised?
Not at all.
What do you like?
I'd say weekend Jew. If there was a wedding, bar mitzvah, a funeral, we were Jewish.
It's not even like maybe one weekend a month.
No, it was, I remember my father, when my sister first became Orthodox Jewish, I said, Dad, if you know, do you approve of this? He says, yeah, it's fine. He says, you know, and I said, well, why don't you become an Orthodox Jew? He says, oh, well, she's doing it, so we don't have to.
That's nice, right? Well, it's kind of like in Catholic families where one person gets picked out to be the nun or the priest, uh-huh. and then everyone else is off the hook.
Right.
They take it for the team.
Yes.
So, what do you like about it now? I mean, how much of your ideology is it?
Because my sister disowned me for being gay, and she went into being an Orthodox Jew. You know, I don't like to talk about this publicly, really, but I, you know, what the hell? You know, it just sort of ruined me for organized religion.
Okay.
And I have a bad taste in my mouth from it.
Okay.
So I'm a juxtaposed because there was so much pain around it to have somebody who is a family member that was so close to disown you and tell you that you were basically not good enough to be allowed into her home or to meet her children, you know, it just doesn't, I just have a hard time with it. And then I guess the positive part of that, to raise the vibration, would be that I'm fascinated with religion. I love to talk about it, but I don't believe it is religion to be something that is real or have anything to do with God, higher power, or spirituality.
Right.
It doesn't have anything to do with any of those things.
I agree, because religion was made by man.
Yes, it's all made up.
Absolutely.
And also the idea of a bunch of people getting together and interpreting something the same way without question seems odd to me. And that's what I'm totally, completely fascinated with, is blind faith. When something doesn't, and to say, hey, like I believe, what I told you is I believe that there must be something that we don't, you know, our essence, who we are, our mind doesn't go away. It just goes into another form. Because I remember when my dad passed, I walked into his bedroom and it looked like somebody hit. I got there 10 minutes after he died, and it was like somebody had stuck a pin in him and all of the life force had come out of him.
Yeah, my mom too, when she passed,
so,
the same thing.
And all of a sudden it was like right. Okay, so I'm done with this costume. It's like somebody,
yeah, and did
it's
you
like
sort
somebody
of feel
threw a
like,
suit on the floor.
Did, right, and did you sort of feel like this body doesn't mean anything to me?
Oh,
I was
like,
looking at my mother, and I thought, this doesn't mean anything
left.
To me anymore. She left, and I saw her leave. She went whoosh right out her right foot, and then
you
I thought,
saw the body.
I saw her soul shoot right out of her solar plexus.
But I bet you didn't see it that way. I bet the way you really saw it, and most people can relate, because what you're saying with it, people see it as a weird kind of airy fairy thing. What you saw is you saw the body sort of. It was like shh. It was like a tire that all the air got out of. So all of a sudden, it looked like she'd gone someplace.
Yeah.
But that's the part we don't.
I saw a white ball fly out of her right foot.
You actually saw it?
I saw it.
Okay. Well, then you did see something.
It was like
But usually you don't see anything. What happens is the body decompresses.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, well.
And then I said to the nurse.
And I'm looking around right now so people can't see because it's radio.
I said to the nurse, I think she's dead. And she said, what? And she went and checked all the machines. And she said,
yeah, she left.
She said, she is. How did you know? And I said, because this doesn't, I don't feel anything for what's left.
And you can feel it, too.
Yeah, you can. It's
strange. Because, you know, our feeling, like if I walked in this room and we weren't paying attention and you did something on the computer and you were looking down, I could almost tell that you were no longer, like at times during this interview for folks who don't, you know, you have to do certain things on the computer and the thing. To make the show run, and I can feel when you're not completely 100% there. Maybe you're 90 because you're so good at this.
That's your intuition.
Yeah.
That's your empathic thing.
I can feel.
We create a cord that runs between us while we do this interview.
Exactly.
And if I'm not completely plugged in, you
right.
can feel that.
Sometimes
I'm not
you just loosen
in.
A little so you can do whatever you need to do to make the show work.
Which is interesting because when my mom was dying, I felt her unraveling our connection. And the only way I can describe it is when you untie an ice skate and you're working the laces from both sides.
Uh-huh.
And when it started, I panicked. I thought, oh, my God, what is she doing? And then I thought, oh, she's letting me go. And
but
I
she
think
probably
that,
started a lot earlier and you didn't even notice.
Yeah, but when they had given her the what's the Merced? Is that the stuff that Michael Jackson died from? The stuff that puts you into like a twilight sleep?
The deep sleep.
And they were going to get the morphine to let her go in palliative care. and her oxygen levels were going down anyhow. And then all of a sudden, it just felt like the ice skates, the laces were coming undone.
Your mom was ill. What did she have?
She just stopped breathing.
What was her illness?
She didn't have an illness. She just stopped breathing.
Wow.
Suddenly, she just stopped making the oxygen that you need for your pulmonary system.
Oh, see, my dad had cancer, so that unraveling was...
Oh, I'm sure.
...was a lot longer.
Yeah, this was
and
happening like a mad thing.
And he wanted to make sure things were all taken care
but
of.
But I got to tell you, it was the biggest service she ever did for me. Because I think that people don't do it when they die. And they leave that cord with their loved ones, and that's that panic and that fear and that I can't live without you, and oh my God, she let me go so that I could live without her. It doesn't mean, of course, I remember her and I love her and I miss her, but she didn't leave that the cord that comes out of me and goes down into the ground. You know, some people don't let go when they die, and they leave their loved ones in this state of panic. And then it's for us to sort of figure out how to let it go. But she sort of did it for me, which I think was just another a testament to how brilliant she was as a spiritual person.
Do you think as a country that we have information about this somewhere? It would be hard for me to believe that Donald Trump would be willing to listen to anything like this.
No, I don't. I don't know how much the government has and doesn't have. I certainly think they have more information about extraterrestrials than we know.
So that would mean that an extraterrestrial could be somebody from this planet that went to a different form.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
There's never been anything spoken about that.
Mm-mm. No, but there's certainly within the ufology community. Yes,
maybe we are more than one person.
Okay. Maybe we're the makeup of a lot of people that we've been throughout different incarnations.
But maybe we're more than one person at the same time.
Okay.
Did you ever see the movie with Matthew McConaughey? It was called... I forgot the name of it. With Matthew McConaughey. It was a George Zemeckis film about time and space. And he actually met his mother. And it was just... I really want to see. It's one of the movies I want to see again.
I can't even think of it. I can't think of what that is at all. I'm sure I've seen it.
Matthew McConaughey. I'm not saying it.
McConaughey?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to show you the name of the film. Interstellar.
I've never seen it. I've never seen Interstellar. I would love to.
You
missed
have
it.
To. It's Every on.
I always miss it when it's on, and I have not seen it.
You have HBO or one of those things on demand.
I do, but I don't have Epix, and that's the one that it's on.
Oh, it is. Well, you should buy it.
I want to get Epix, but
you buy it
for some reason, my cable doesn't seem to want to have it. Every time I try to order it, it doesn't work.
You should buy it or call them, or just buy the DVD and Amazon and watch it. I think that there's something... And I'd love to talk to you about that afterwards.
Yeah.
There's a certain thing about that really, it was all about time and space and how that connects. And it was really, I couldn't comprehend it all in the thing because the director set up the sound to be done in an IMAX theater. And the sound was just very difficult at times.
Oh, okay.
And that sort of made it
hard.
You think
they would readjust it for the DVD and Blu-ray, wouldn't you?
I don't know.
I know, that's
I'm hoping that they did.
Yeah.
But some of the directors are, you know, fussy about the way they want their films done.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
It's awesome. So where do you consider yourself now? Would you call yourself spiritual?
I don't like the word spiritual anymore. You know why? Because everybody keeps using it.
Okay.
And the more people use it seems to no longer have the meaning that it is for me.
Okay.
I consider myself a child of a higher power.
Okay, that's beautiful.
In a way. That there's something. And the higher power is not a human being. The higher power is the connection of people.
Sure.
So we are all higher power.
Do you think anybody thinks of God as a human being?
Yes.
That's kind of scary.
I think a lot of people do.
It's kind of scary. Human beings are not that advanced.
But I think a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Do I think of God as a human being?
I think a lot of people think of them. Yes.
Yeah. Well, because that's sort of what's in their Bibles, their books.
because it's written by man, and that's how. And mm-hmm. they, you know, when those were written, there was a simplicity among the people. Mm-hmm. I don't think their brains were developed as.
Don't believe that angels are jealous of us, and that all the creatures of the earth wish they were us. And
I think we're all a part of us.
Think if you asked a dolphin, "Do you wish you were a human?" I think they would laugh their asses off while they moved in the water. I think they would at you, because I just don't think.
I don't know.
I think when people take pictures with dolphins, when they swim with the dolphins, I think the dolphin always kind of looks like I'm with stupid. I think that we live in a world where we have an inflated sense of self as a species.
Oh God, yeah.
You know, we assume we're the smartest. We assume we're the most evolved. We assume we're the kindest. We assume that we're the only ones that have intelligent thought.
But that's a human thing.
It's a human thing, yeah.
I think such, yeah. We are so brainwashed.
Yeah, I agree. You're wonderful, my friend. Will you come back and we'll do this again?
Yeah.
Where can people find you online?
JasonStewart.com, STUART. And can I give some dates from things?
Please.
So on the 21st of February at 5 p.m., I will be at the Real Film Festival. I'm in a film called A Diverted Eden, and I play a detective for the first time.
Nice.
It's a wonderful film with the guy from Borak, the heavyset guy, and then so many people that I can't remember all their names. Michael Urie is in it, and it's a wonderful thriller, action thriller. It's really a different kind of movie that I've been in. In March, I'll be in episode 5 of playing Oscar Bustamante in a new series called Swedish Dicks, and it's a sort of Arrested Development kind of comedy. Next week, if you're in San Diego, I will be doing stand-up comedy at this wine bar place.
Nice.
And you can find out the name of it and everything on my website. And on the 21st and 22nd, I'll be at the Ice House.
Beautiful.
In Pasadena. On the 14th, I'll be at the Laugh Factory in Long Beach. And that's it.
What a rock star you are. And we met at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood.
Yes, we did.
I like that story.
You were nice enough to put me on your show, or okay me being put on your show.
Of course.
Or however that worked
out. Are you kidding me? Always. And then I brought you on this show all on my own, and now here you've been for the last 9 years on all my different shows here at LA Talk Radio.
Yes, we are.
And now
connected.
We're friends.
Yes, we're
connected. The most magic story that comes out of radio. You make a friend. If you missed any of the links for the wonderful Jason Stewart, you can go to raisingthevibrationradio.com, latalkradio.com. Send me an email, and I will gladly pass all of his links on over to you and any dates that you want. Until I see you next week here on Raising the Vibration, a couple of things. Please visit us at IamRaisingTheVibration.com and at TheVibrationNation.com and become part of this movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity. Please always keep peace in your heart, even if you don't think peace is something that's attainable or possible right now. Don't lose the hope and the dream that someday we may live in a peaceful world. Always live in love. Think of love, be in love. Love should be the motivation for so much that you do, and lead in everything that you do with kindness. If you just, everybody became 5% more kind every day, the tsunami of kindness that would enfold the earth would be unbelievable. And most importantly is unity. You know, we're more alike than we are different, and we are one human family. We don't have to like each other. We don't have to always get along. We don't have to always be where the others are or do what the others are doing, but we do have to realize that we are one human family on this earth, and that unity is so important because, as I said at the beginning of the show, the opposite of that is frightening. It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Sheena Metal. Till I see you next Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Thanks for listening. I love you all.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.